This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Benign Images. Benign Images is a storyteller consulting company. Through meaningful dialogue and guidance, they help storytellers of all kinds to tell the stories that they feel they have a need to tell, whether it's through simple editor services, consulting, or helping creatives to set up an effective work habit. Benign Images will work with you to help you become a better storyteller. Start your project with them today by visiting their website, benignimages.com. That is benignimages.com, B-E-N-I-G-N, images.com. Go check them out. What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on a musician, a music manager, and also the author of the brand new book, Staying Sane in the Music Game, a manual to improve the lives of musicians. This is Brett LaBoff. How you doing, Brett?
Great, Zuby. Thanks for having me on. I had this thought as we're setting up here. I couldn't do this in the office. So my other option without disturbances, you know, without being in the lounge in the house, was in my bedroom. And I'm looking around this quite small, it's not a great room. And I started feeling a little bit embarrassed. And it took me on a journey of, I'm about to move to London. Things are starting to move really nicely. But, you know, it took me back to when I first moved back to England after basically had a, I guess it was a breakdown. I gave up music management after about 13 years and went traveling with my ex, and found I was infertile, and we split up. And luckily I was offered this job at Diplomats of Sound as head of artist development. I came to Bristol. I didn't really know anyone, and I've lived in various small rooms basically to keep my overheads down. That was the thing, is actually, you know, I knew instinctively about mental health wise what one thing that I needed to do was live. I generally have always lived within my means, however small those are. And that's very relevant for musos, you know, just keeping overheads down. And I'm glad I've done that. But yeah, I'm good. But I started thinking about, look at the background for this. You know what? I've seen people at cute little desks on look at your nice chair. You know,
this is called real talk. So we try to keep things as authentic as possible. I feel like we've kind of jumped in at a late part of the story there. Yeah. But I want to hit the rewind button and. Let's go back and talk a little bit more.
I guess I just wanted to give context to that. You know, how many times is that question met with just a vacuous answer? Mm. How are you? Well, true. Actually, how I am is this is what's going on for me.
Okay,
right
I hear
now,
you. I hear
just
you.
Wanted to. So yeah, let's hit the rewind. Yeah.
Yeah, man, let's go back. So you just touched on a whole bunch of stuff there. Like that was sure. a whole book you've already given us there.
Right.
But let's take us back. So talk us through more about your journey as a musician, as a music industry guy, up until where you are now. Tell us a little bit about Brett, who you are, where you're from, what exactly it is that you
yeah.
do.
Okay, so I grew up in a little town called Watford, just north of London. Grew up in a crazy abusive household. There was sexual abuse, violent abuse, you know, just it was chaos, basically, kind of up to my teenage years. Discovered drums at the age of 11. I'd played a bit of piano. Luckily, my family were quite musical. You know, my granddad was really into music and he'd often be tinkling the ivories. And my bro was playing piano really well. And I wasn't so into the piano. I quit piano after a few years and started playing drums. I just saw them, you know, I saw them when I went to the big school, if you like, and was blown away. And I just buried myself in drums from the age of 11. I think that was my way of dealing with what was going on, you know, and went and became a pro musician. I went to college. I was constantly surrounded by amazing musos. And my route into management was simply that I didn't want the session gig, you know, and that was going to be the route in to make. And I was that's what I was doing, you know, to make money. And I was teaching and function gigs. And I really loved the originals bands and being in a, that's how I wanted to make it. If I was going to make my living, I wanted to be in a band. And as a drummer, I didn't have so much control. Normally there was a lot of ego, you know, and yeah. I was a peacemaker a lot of the time. And then I started getting into the strategy, you know, when are we next rehearsing? How are we going to get some gigs? You know, all the really basic grassroots stuff. And then eventually coming to set up a label to get a single out actually never happened because the band broke up before the single came out.
Oh, right.
But that was my route in. And I was very, very fortunate that a pal of mine, who's a music lawyer, he was a bass player and had got tendonitis. He confronted me about my knowledge. He was worried that I was getting deep in. I'd set up a company and he said, I don't think you know what you're doing. And I was like, you're right. And he actually joined me for about 5 years and trained me in everything, which was a massive blessing. And then I went on for another, 8-9 years before I just burnt out. And one of the fundamentals of this, I took time out and then I've come back to do artist development. I wrote the book. But one of the fundamentals of the burnout, I think, was I'd hidden all of my personal story, all of my life. And it wasn't until my ex-wife called me out on it, you know, and just said, look, I think you've got stuff that you've never really spoken about, and tried to explain the impact of that. And then she set me on a journey which took in a year and a half of psychotherapy and then went from there, loads of personal development courses. You know, there's so much out there now. If we go looking for it, we're in an amazing time where people are being encouraged to use processes to help us. So yeah, so that's kind of got me to this place. It got me to writing the book, but I was blown away by the impact that I realized that had actually on all areas of my life. But the other thing is that one of the processes I went on was a Vipassana meditation course, like 10-day silent meditation retreat.
Okay.
And I went to the zone that I'd been to on stage practicing. You know, some people get to that zone doing the gardening. You might get to that zone in the gym, you know, whatever you're doing. And I never realized until that moment that the zone, I call it the zone, is accessible without either playing drums or doing drugs.
Oh, I could have told you that a long time ago.
Yeah, Well, but actually, then yeah. I started realizing that musicians weren't aware of that. Like, hey, guys, you know that place we go to on stage? I can show you quite a few other ways to get there.
Yep.
We weren't talking. No one was talking about that. And actually, it's an altered state, right? And it's like, well, what are the obvious other altered states? So we just go for them.
Yeah, sure.
And so that was the actual beginnings of the book. So that's the foundations of the book. And then there's loads of other stuff about how we communicate. How do we work within teams, within bands? How do we make decisions? Because it doesn't need to be majority rule decision making. Lots and lots of other stuff. But that was kind of the cushion into it, the springboard into it.
I got you. So what was it that prompted you to make the book? I've actually got a copy of it right here, Staying Sane in the Music right. Game. Was it your own personal experience and journey? Was it what you were seeing from other artists that you were working with or managing? Or I guess potentially just a combination of everything. What was it that made you think, okay, you know what? I need to sit down and write this book and put my story out there and help other people.
Well, I guess it's a combo of everything I've told you. I thought it was a unique experience. It wasn't conscious. Basically, I woke up one night. I actually originally thought of the title. What happened is I woke up one night with mindfulness for musicians, but like that hit me. And I jumped out of bed and I mind mapped out 7 chapters like immediately. Yeah. It was like this. It was pretty cosmic, man. I mean, it was just like, you know, sometimes just feel like, you know, consciousness is around us. It just went boom like that. And I was like, I've got to do this.
Yeah.
I didn't think. Yeah. Obviously, I thought, OK, mindfulness for musicians, like bringing that in, something that I hadn't seen around. Basically, I've been around musos for 20 years.
Yeah.
So I realized that was lacking. And then as it was developing, I realized that there was so many, there's patterns of behavior that come up all the time. The same things that we would see, my mistakes, you know, what stories of how things happen and how they could have been different, but they're much more structured. Realizing that actually, that one of the other fundamentals of the book is the idea that I realized that we have to impose structure on ourselves. We've actually been chasing this dream of getting out the rat race and being free.
Mm-hmm.
And we all we need to do is do music. Then you realize that if you want to make money out of your music, then you're actually in business.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need structure. If you don't impose structure on yourself, then you get lost, really. And again, you know, these are all things. So it ends up being a manual of every aspect.
Gotcha.
And I used my journey as a model because I don't think it's that different. The only things I brought in were the personal development side, which I've been very, very deep into for the last, say, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my messed up childhood, and then talking about this kind of joining the dots and of my journey and trying to make sense and build awareness around it. And then I could bring in other things like shadow work from Carl Jung and
mm-hmm.
things that I've learned on that personal development journey, which go far and wide, and things I've learned on the music journey. And it's kind of like deconstructing it all and then putting it all back together and saying, well, how could all of this have been better? All sure. of it. And I think because I know artists, I know I'm speaking to them as I would speak to artists, as I would be expected to be spoken to as an artist.
I get you. So, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, because obviously, you know, I'm a full-time professional musician myself. I mean, out of all the career paths that I'm aware of, I think that music in itself has the highest, probably the highest rate of mental health issues and anxiety and depression and all that kind of stuff. I'm very blessed and fortunate in that personally, I'm pretty immune to all that, partially due to my personality type, but also partially due to my upbringing, really, to be honest. So that's something that's always intrigued me. I understand why it's the case, because I know that that personality, I actually have a very weird personality type for a musician. Like my personality is more like a pilot or a surgeon or something like that.
Yeah.
If I were to do a test of like what your occupation should be, it's probably, it'll land in something more like that. But I know with, musician and creative personalities, whether that's artists, actors, painters, anything like that, they tend to be, I don't know how familiar you are with like the Big Five personality model. They tend to be very high in openness and also very high in neuroticism.
Yes.
And high neuroticism is obviously linked to depression, anxiety, high highs and very low lows.
Yes, exactly.
So then, of course, you've got the fact that, you know, financially, it's a very, very, very up and down financially and unpredictable. In terms of work, it can be very unpredictable. You can be doing early mornings, late nights, exactly. Lots of traveling, lots of exactly. Meeting other people. And then again, I've never touched a drug. I don't even drink. I'm very straight edge in that regard, which I'm grateful for, because I think I probably would have gone off some deep end if I weren't. But, you know, you couple that kind of personality and that kind of industry, and then on top of it, you add the alcohol and the drugs and all that kind of stuff. And it is a bit of a recipe for a disaster, you know? I mean, there's certain artists that you look at either past or present, and you're kind of like, this is a very, just like a bit of a dangerous situation. It's like, if there's no intervention here.
Yeah. Yeah. And also you work out a lot as well.
Absolutely.
You have done for a long time, right?
Yep. I've been training longer than I've been rapping.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, for that. So just that, I would say, I always say like, you always need something to ground you. So for me, I've got really into what I call zone technique, which is, you know, it's essentially meditation, but I explain that work, what I explain how to get to the zone without your instrument, basically. And musicians will understand it when they touch that. But it's the altered states thing, without it having a, so if I sit for 20 minutes or half an hour, I'm only going to feel better afterwards. Yeah. You know, if you go to the gym for an hour, you know, you're only going to feel better. But then we go for the other altered states where they have the impact for maybe for days, or if you're in a cycle, then, you know, who knows what. And I think that also what you were saying, I resonated. I think a lot of musicians haven't had a happy childhood.
Yeah.
It all starts with that. You know, all of our problems basically come from us not understanding defense mechanisms that we've built up as a child, because we felt that we needed them in order to survive, and never unpicked our behavioral patterns from that time. And I think that often when I see musicians that are unhappy, that's generally what's going on. And then add on top of that unhealthy living,
yep,
all the pressures, the ego issues, boom, you know, then you've got the disastrous situation.
Yeah, for real. I mean, it's one reason why, I mean, there's thousands of reasons why I love the gym and training.
Yeah.
But whether someone's a musician, a creative, or not, just anybody, it's why it's one of those things I always recommend to people, just as like a, what I'd kind of call like a keystone habit. I mean, you were talking about having a routine, having structure, and it's one of those things that what I always make sure of, no matter how much I'm traveling, no matter how busy, I always make sure that doesn't change. Like that's, I will go to the gym, because if I let that piece go, then it's weird. I can almost correlate my life with how well the gym and my training is going and my diet and everything else. It's like, if that piece slips, then I don't know by what effect. I don't know if it's grounder. Psychological. Yeah, exactly. It's like that one thing. And when I'm in there, it's like, it's the time that I don't think about anything else. Like if I'm lying in bed, if I'm sitting here, I'm constantly thinking of whether it's creative stuff or it's business ideas or it's worrying about something. But that's the one place where I don't think about, all I'm thinking of is lifting the weight, getting the training done. So that sort of hour and a half, it's just like everything else goes quiet. I get in that zone.
That's the zone, right? So what you're talking about is the zone. And this is something that the reason why I don't use the word meditation, because no one ever explained this to me in simple terms. Why do we reach that zone? Because we're concentrating on one thing only. without trying to change it, without judgment, without focusing on the outcome. So we're completely in that moment. And that's why our subconscious flow happens when we're playing on stage and everything's going great, because we're in that zone when the conscious mind is completely shut off, basically. It's closed. And we've trained ourselves for so long to get there.
Mm.
You know, you've been doing it with gym and music. But that's the, you need to go to that place. I think musicians, we need to go to that place, as much as possible whilst doing other stuff for free.
Yeah.
Without you know, the impact that drink or drugs bring us. And I think that your one is that, but also the knock on effects of exercise, man, is,
oh yeah,
it's not just that you're going to the zone, you're doing stuff to your body that is going to have, you know, the stuff that's going on in your brain, you know, and the chemicals that are being released there. Mm-hmm.
Exercise and diet is the best medicine.
They're probably the things that musicians do the worst.
Seriously. Yeah. Seriously. Like whenever someone is, I don't know if this is politically correct or not, but whenever, you know, I'm hearing people talking about like depression or anxiety and certain mental health issues and stuff, I always think my first thought is always, have you exercised and is your diet on point?
Yeah.
That's always my first thing. Cause people jump straight to a lot of other things. And even sometimes drugs or prescription medicine or whatever. I haven't done any studies, so this is unscientific, but I think for a very significant percentage of people, I think if they got those two things on point, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be a, you know, like some professional athlete or something, but just, are you exercising four or five times a week?
Yeah.
And is your diet generally at least 80%? Is 80% of what you're feeding yourself good and nutritious?
Actual food.
Yeah, yeah. And
Names.
Exactly. And for almost everyone, the answer is no. And it's like, well, why not get those two things sorted? And then if you if there's like still an issue, then I think that's kind of the time to go to the next level. But I think that people overlook that for whatever reason.
I guess it's the same like when I'm talking about the zone technique, meditation stuff. You know, it's that word exercise. And it's like, do you exercise? And people think, well, how's that going to make a difference? You know, and I've been there, man. That's why I know, because that's the strength of this book, is that I've been to all over the edges. You know, I've dropped over all the edges. I know where the pitfalls are. I know how it feels to think, how is that going to change my life? You know what, going for a run? What are you talking about? Like, how is that, you know? And actually, often these things as well, they take some time. You know, you might feel worse
the first time
for a few days.
Yeah,
for the first few days that you exercise, it's like when you change anything. You know, if you were coming off a drug, you're going to feel bad for like however long that drug, coming off that drug, makes you feel bad for. Until then, one day after maybe a few weeks, you're like, wow, this is really making a difference. So you have to think like that, don't you? That people expect this sort of instant gratification. Okay, well, I'll try this run thing then, you know, and expect that they're going to feel like so that is an emphasis, isn't it? That we have to, I feel a responsibility to try and communicate as authentically as possible without the sort of preaching and, you know, that I've got it all sorted understanding. I totally get that when you're sitting in bed with your curtains shut and you've been on a bender and everything's dark, you know, that going for a run or trying to, you know, learn how to meditate is not, all of this is so much easier said than actually and it's integration, isn't it? So you can become really aware of something.
Mm-hmm.
So then I start saying, you know, if I fall out of a practice, well, I've got a few practices that ground me. If I fall out of a practice, I will become aware of it. And then I will set myself a plan that is really realistic. So it's not like I'm really bad at change. I'm very bad at transition. My mum would, I'd be playing Lego and my mum would be like, right, swimming.
Mm.
And I'd be like, but Lego, no, swimming. And that's great that she wants me to go, you know, but that actually is that kind of stuff that happened when I was young. That's not abuse, you know, mum being really sound. But these are the other things that happen just in your childhood, which, you know, that give you stuff that you have to work out. Why is that? And that's my stuff. And so I have to think, right, okay, let's think. I haven't been to the gym for a couple of months. Let's say, okay, well, look, you know, it's Wednesday now. Let's build up to it. I start getting my diet better between now and Sunday. Let's mm-hmm. say, like, Mondays are always dodgy. Let's say Tuesday I'm going to start, you know, but also being really realistic about how you are as a person and what you're going to nail, because they have to be realistic goals because we want to nail them, right? And that feels really good. So, yeah, I'm glad we sort of explored that, because that's also, you know, the vibe of the book is very much like, well, you find, this is all suggested, you find what works for you, but use these conversations and this book as a springboard into that.
Yeah, well, I think conversation is always important. I mean, conversation is important for a lot of reasons, but one thing that I've really become hyper aware of in the last couple of years is that once you've done something for a long time, it's easy to forget the journey you went on to get there.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you get this, right? As someone who's been in the music world for 20 years, I'm sure you get questions from aspiring drummers or managers or artists or whatever, you know, with all these questions. And some of them are things which to you might even seem quite obvious. Right. Someone might be like, OK, how do I do how do I book a gig? Mm. How do I do, you know, and to you, the answer is kind of like, well, you know, it's very obvious. Right. And I get the same sometimes. And sometimes it's like you said, about not wanting to be preachy or try to come across like, you know, everything. But I've realized that there's a lot of stuff that I've learned. There's plenty of experience I've gained. There's a lot of knowledge I have, the way my mindset works, which is actually quite rare, I guess, certainly in the combination of doing things. So even that's why, I wrote and released my own book a couple of weeks ago, my fitness book.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've been training for 16 years and a lot of the stuff in there is stuff that I almost forgot that I had to learn it. You
What's
see what
it
I mean?
Called?
So it's called Strong Advice.
Strong Advice by Zuby.
Zuby's Guide to Fitness for Everybody.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. So mindset, fitness, nutrition, you know, breaking it all down in very plain, simple, easy to understand ways, whether someone's a beginner, an intermediate, you want to improve your physique, you want to get stronger, you want to get fitter. This is what you need to know. This is what you need to know about eating. This is what you need to know about training. Right. These are the basic principles. Like, forget all the super, you know, if I wanted to get super complicated and technical, I could, but there's no need to, right?
Yeah.
Just understand this. This will give you 98%. You can worry about the other 2% when you're already, you know, once you're ready to step on a bodybuilding stage, then you can worry about the other 2%. But until then, most people don't need to know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people get bogged down in the nonsense. So I think these conversations are really important because, you know, you just get different people's perspective. There might be something that you say, and I'm like, you know, I've never thought of it that way. There might be something I say, and you're like, okay, that's something I can incorporate. That's something I can integrate. And the more people you talk to, and people have different backgrounds and different experiences and different personalities. Yeah. So everyone's going to come with something
really
different.
Really strong then, actually, about it's sort of what I was hearing was, the more you know something, the more sort of esoteric knowledge you gain about that thing.
Hmm.
And actually, I think my mission has always been to translate things into simple language. So that book is really simple to read. It's really taking the technical aspects of anything that I'm trying to teach in there and breaking it down to the simplest ways of understanding it, using metaphor or stories or situations that we're very familiar with. And actually, I feel like that's always been my mission, is to make it really, really easy to understand. And you're right, you know, the better people get at things, the less they're normally able to do that because they know too much almost.
Exactly.
And it's understanding. And I guess part of that is it's almost a gratitude crossed with an understanding of who I was when I've started this thing. And almost communicating to myself at that point. Yeah.
Telling your old self what you wish you knew at the time.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's kind of, I think that's actually what was going on in the book. And it was very, very, it was, for me, that was kind of my final big process. There's lots of processes still need to be done, but, or are being done, but that sort of these huge epiphany of wake up call things that was kind of writing the book was a big process for me. As a closure exercise, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and in terms of helping other people, I mean, my North Star, my goal in life is to have a positive impact on 10 million people. That's my long-term
10 million.
Yeah. That's my long-term lifetime goal. That's why I do my music. That's why I do my podcast. That's why I'm going to write books. That's why I'm going to do more public speaking. Everything I do, I'm like, all right, I want to impact.
A good number.
Yeah, I want to impact 10 million people.
Okay.
And so that's what drives me and everything. So I'm like, any abilities that I have, I want to put out there. So
can I just do you mind if I interject there?
No, go for it.
Because I tell you what, it strikes me, it's really interesting. And I love your goal, and I think it's a very valid goal. I also worry for musicians nowadays that they think like that only because and I think it's very much of our time that because of the internet there is an idea of big impact thinking and musicians get this a lot when they're not doing that, you know, when they're playing in clubs to 50 to 100 people and they're thinking about the 10 million.
That's 100 more.
Yeah, absolutely. But also just about the impact on family and friends and our close. The issue with that, right, you're in a great state mentally. So you can start thinking about the 10 million and then you'll be thinking, well, there's another 100 and there's another 1,000. And that's great because you'll be celebrating. So I can see that you personally don't have an issue with this thing. But I see a pattern that comes up a lot, and it's very worrying for me, which is the, you know, when someone's not in a great place in themselves, we can get into patterns of either self-hating and blaming ourselves or blaming others and looking outside at all the problems in the world and all that kind of thing. So I've seen two routes with this. One is going down this route of sort of becoming very politically active and wanting to fix the world, even though inside as a person, there's lots of issues that are not fixed and it's sort of very unintegrated person going on.
Yeah.
Or feeling absolutely useless because they're not impacting 10 million people yet.
Okay.
And so I'm always talking about celebrating the small wins.
Oh yeah.
Looking in at the tiny thing, which is obviously what you've already done in order to get to where you are right now. And you're looking ahead, and that I think it's healthy to have that goal. It's also to not forget our impact on a smile to someone in the street and a hello, how are you to a neighbor, and a just looking outside of our heads at one other person and impacting one other person that day. And so I just wanted to balance what you were saying.
Yeah,
that,
no, that's
because
that's,
it's a thing that comes up.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, I know I will do it. So
yeah, I love you though. And
it won't all be just purely through music. That's why I've started to branch out into other things, because I know there's a particular could hit 10 million people just through music. That's potentially possible, but I know in terms of my interests and ideas and abilities, it goes beyond that. You know, I know I can do public speaking. I know I can do business stuff. I know I can do this podcast. This podcast is going to go onto the radio soon. So I know I can, you know, there's all these different things. So it actually used to be 1 million, But then I read a book called The 10X Rule, and it said any big goals you have, you need to add a zero onto them. So I thought, okay, it's no longer 1 million, it's 10 million. And to be honest, one million no longer seems it no longer seems far away enough for me, right? Like at the stage it's at now, it's like, okay, cool. Like I've certainly, well, I know I've already reached millions of people in some way. I mean, I know I'm followed by well over 100,000 people. So in terms of that, I'm like, okay, cool. 10 million is like 100 times that. So
yeah.
Yeah. And I need my goal to be high enough for it to like, otherwise it doesn't drive me.
How do you see the baby steps involved in that then?
Oh,
how
man.
Do you contextualize? So let's just say, yeah. you know, we're going for the 10 million.
Yep.
So what's your goal today? You know, how have you broken that down?
Okay.
As in some people, you see what, again, related to what I said, that some people that would cause inertia. In some people,
yeah,
whereas you. For you, you're buzzing about it.
That drives me. No, that drives me. That literally gets me out of bed every morning.
I want to see your process with the baby steps in that.
Okay. Though. Well, the baby steps have been, like I said, I mean, I've been, so I've been making music since, I mean, I don't know how much you know about my music itself. I've put out my first album in 2006 when I was in university. Right. So independently without a record label so far, you know, I mean, I've released 5 albums and 3 EPs, sold over 25,000 albums, 100% independently.
Yeah.
No anything. Performed in 8 different countries, 4 million views online, and got 120,000 followers on social media now. I've built a lot of those connections one at a time.
Yeah.
So most of my top fans, I've literally met them.
Yeah.
I know their names. They know me. If I go to different cities in the UK, yeah. people will come and see me. So I'm very... Although my goal is numeric,
yes.
I look at the each individual relationship. Yeah. I'm very aware that I'm always talking to a person. Like right now, yeah. I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
I'm talking to Brett. My focus yeah. is on Brett. We're having yeah. this conversation. I'm yeah. not like, I'm not there thinking of, oh no, I'd rather be on out on some podium yeah. talking to, it's like, no, like each conversation, whether it's an hour or 2 hours or 2 or 30 seconds, when I say 10 million people, that's like 10 million individual relationships to me. Does that make sense? It's not just like a vanity number. It's like, no, I want to have a, yeah. you know, I might not know all those people personally.
But either, which is
no, really, no, no. To me, yeah. that's a lifetime goal.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lifetime goal. That's not.
So what I'm hearing from you is, although you've got this big goal up there, you're kind of day to day, you're not going 10 million, 10 million, 10 million,
no,
you're going,
no.
you're looking at the, like you said, you're talking about in the moment, building proper relationships.
Exactly.
So that's why I asked you about that, because yeah. it's really important that you're actually, once you've got that big goal in mind, you're not really thinking of that all the time. You're more thinking about just getting on and building these relationships and yeah. getting yourself out there in various ways. So yeah, yeah, okay.
And it's also thinking about the sort of ripple effect as well.
Mm.
So I don't know. Take, for example, this book you've written. So you may have written it in some part to document your own story and for it to be a little bit cathartic in a way.
Mm. That's how it started. Yeah. I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But then over the years, over the next decades, who knows how many, I mean, yeah. I don't know how many artists or other people in music or even people outside music will read this book. And I mean, I'm sure for some of them, it'll have a life-changing, you know, a life-changing effect. Just like, you know, I've had people message me and say, you know what, this song of yours or this thing you said online or whatever, it impacted me in such a way that, you know, whatever. I've had people who have messaged me saying like, I started going to the gym because of you. And now I've lost 50 pounds or I've done this or I've achieved that. And that's like, wow. And that was very passive. That wasn't me even going out of my way to reach that specific person.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just say something or you hear, it's happened with me. I've heard certain song lyrics or something, you know, you might have a song lyric that you just heard and you were just like, oh, that's profound. Like that little thing, that little word or that little quote or whatever from this person way, way, way over there, that has impacted my life more than, you know, it's all ripple effects, right? If you become a better person, that impacts all those people around you. If I become a better person, it impacts people around me, and then I can do more and you can do more. And if we were all to, it's a little bit like the, I've heard Jordan Peterson talk about this a lot. It's a little bit like if everyone were to reach their own potential and go on their own self-development journey, if every, like, if you imagine if everybody did that, if everybody did that, then how far
amazing
would we be as a society? How great would
more headspace for everyone else, you know?
Yeah, exactly. More, you know, and if you're feeling good, you treat other people, but you treat other people better.
Yeah,
and then they treat, you know, it's impossible to know how far the knock-on effects go, but I think it's very exponential.
Yeah, and I think another part of this book was basically this is specific to musicians and music industry pros, and there isn't any specific self-development focused book out there for musos at the moment. So that was once I'd written it, it was actually looking and going, actually, this is pretty original. I mean, yeah, there's plenty of, you know, and it is a self-help kind of book, but it's actually acknowledging the specific struggles in our industry, in our lives that come up because we're in music. So it brings all that in as well. But yeah, and actually I did it not knowing what the outcome would be, and it was only until my girlfriend's a clinical psychologist, you know, she read it and she said, Brett, this is great, you're actually using the tools that you've developed to get yourself to where you are actually deep psychological principles that you've just said without, you know, you've given these tools and practices without naming them as that, but they're there, and it comes from experience. So it wasn't until she'd read it that I was like, okay, this, so it needs to go out there, you know? Otherwise maybe I would have
kept it to yourself a bit
yeah
more.
Exactly, yeah, just for family.
Well, I think if you make something that you know helps people and has value, then it's almost your ethical duty to promote it.
It's like, so when this is the responsibility side. It's like, you know, instead of coming in with this kind of, I really want people to like what I do or whatever it is, you know, actually, like what you've just hit on is another thing that I talk about. It's the responsibility of your duty in society. So I now actually, you know, I'm not that into this, like talking about my book and my ideas, and I'm finding this hard. Like, I'm doing a lot of these podcasts at the moment, and I'm finding it, like, I'm not thinking, great, another podcast for me. Yeah, Brett Leboeuf, you know, I'm thinking, okay, it's been a struggle to get to this point where I even can frame what I'm talking about, you know.
Sure.
The point is I now think that it is my responsibility to get this stuff out there. And actually, if musicians started thinking more about their responsibility to society to bring their gift to society,
exactly,
rather than I want people to like me, what effect, well, you're obviously there because you brought this up, you know, what positive effect does that have, thinking, well, I've got to do this, rather than the other way, which is kind of victim. And
it's almost like giving rather than getting. Right. Yeah, like, rather than what can I get? What can I get? What can I get? It's like, no, what can I give? Yeah. What can I give? You know, it's like you've given this book. So you've created this now. And what's great with things like books is it's timeless. Right. So in 50 years time, this is still relevant. Yeah. Just like we're still reading books from thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
It's like, it's still relevant. Yeah. That was the thing that really spurred me to make my fitness book. Cause I was like, look, I've got all this knowledge and experience, it's here.
I use it for myself,
but I was like, no,
that's
selfish, isn't it? Right? How many people,
people
need this knowledge? And I have it, and I'm just sitting there using it for myself. So I was like, no, let me make something, and then people can, you know, buy it. And I hope over the course of time, I hope that thousands of people, you know, it helps them. So whenever I start feeling like, I'm self-promoting too much almost, I almost twitch it, and I'm almost like, it's my responsibility to you. Like it's ethical.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's ethical for me to get this out to as many people as I can, because I know that it will help them.
This sort of authentic backup side of that is, do you truly believe in that? You know, so I had to make that decision. Do I truly believe in this book? I've read it a lot. So do you truly believe in that song that you're about to put out? You know, if you do, then it's your responsibility. If you don't, then you also have to come to that kind of come to terms with that and say, well, you know what? It was a great process for me, but I don't think the people need this right now, you know? And that's also, you know, the other side of it. But yeah, once you believe in something truly, then actually what does it do if you don't get behind it and push it out there? That's gonna do something to ourselves, right?
That's true.
So
what's your goal for the book? Do you have any particular
10
goals
million.
For
10 million people.
Why not?
Oh man, I mean, you know what?
Probably 10 million people that do need it.
I've already got great feedback from quite a few musicians that have read it. I mean, I haven't had any bad feedback, whether that's just because people, you know, didn't want to say anything. What's my goal really? It's to provide this as a resource. You know, I've made it as easy as possible. I've done an audio book as well. I've got loads of videos on my website. I mean, it's really to start to encourage a conversation about all of this stuff amongst musicians. You know, the idea is use this as a springboard. It's one of the tools that are out there to help mental health in the music industry. My goal is that we take that stat down. I mean, it was that study that was, you know, musicians are three times more likely than anyone else to suffer depression and anxiety. My goal is to be a big part of getting that stat way down, you know, and helping musicians to live much happier lives. And also potentially impact the creative process as well. Positively, and just to get the word out that there's a conversation going on right now, and there are tools, and this is a preventative tool. And my goal is that as many musos can access it as possible and get into it, and that it has a positive effect. Yeah,
no, that sounds awesome, man. If you could give so for someone who hasn't read the book yet, if you could give sort of three key takeaways or three pieces of advice that people can implement now, if they're musicians, if they're in a band, whatever, what would those three pieces of advice be?
Explore other altered states other than drink and drugs. So trying to get to that zone that you get to with your instrument away from your instrument, which I obviously point to having an imposed structure of some sort of imposed structure and discipline a daily habitual discipline other than music stuff. If you're caught in patterns that you don't like and you find yourself questioning why does my life look like this, why do I always do that thing, start thinking about why you developed an attribute that leads you to that place. You know, a pattern comes from somewhere in childhood normally. So you could explore that. I mean, this is a problem with the book is to distill it down. I mean, those are three. There's interaction within bands, there's interaction with the industry, there's conflict resolution, decision making, as I said, every aspect of your musical life, I refer to how to run that better. But yeah, I think those three are pretty useful.
Yeah. Here's a question. In terms of your experience within the music world and having someone who's interacted with tons of artists and bands, do you find that there's a difference between, say, solo artists and bands in terms of how well they seem to be able to stay sane in the music game? I don't know if there's any stats on this. Like, is it tougher for bands? Is it tougher for solo artists. What's been your experience with that, or just your observation?
I mean, this is the thing about the nuanced. This is why the music industry is so difficult, I think, is because of relationships. You know, it's all human factors.
Yeah.
Often it's more human factors because the money's not necessarily there. So you're relying on human drive without payment necessarily. I think they're extremely different. I think where the advantages come in with a band that you might be able to, you know, be a bit more of a team, then that can get blown out the water by the fact that you don't communicate so brilliantly and you actually end up not being a team. You know, that's the challenge, is just that you're not able to all pull in the same direction. Yeah. The solo artist, in some ways it could be easier because you can make the decisions yourself, but then you don't have other people to bounce off. You know, who do you trust? Then you're putting together the team yourself. Yeah. You know, when you're dealing with the industry, I mean, that team that you're then communicating with, you don't have necessarily people on your side. So I think they're probably equally challenging for different reasons. I think it really comes down to who you are as a person. You know, I know an artist that I worked with for many years. He's just not a band guy at all. Yeah. You know, he needs to be working on his own. It depends. I mean, if you've got lots of skills and you don't need to rely on people, then you know, often that means that you're not necessarily up for compromising with people and that kind of thing as well. So, you know, you have to think about, that's the other thing that we talk about in the book, you know, that there's that compromise aspect and the how do you end up working in a team? How do you end up interacting with everyone? Yeah.
Awesome, man. What I'd like to do now is give you a chance to plug your book, let people know where they can actually get it. And if they're interested in purchasing a copy or finding out a little bit more, where can they go?
Cool. So the website is www.stayingsane.org. So stayingsane.org. All the links to buy the book. I mean, it's available in all over the world, in, you know, all the usual download stores, in Amazon. And so the physical book, Kindle, audio book, they're all there. So it's on Audible, Kobo. You know, all the places, Barnes and Noble, all those places. But all the links are on the website to buy the book from those download stores. And then there's videos on the site, like little bite-sized videos of little things, little kind of wisdoms, I guess, that I impart. There's audiobook samples on the website as well. So you can even dig in. I mean, there's about 4 or 5 chapters up there to listen to, to dig into before you think you want to buy it, you know, just to hear what I'm saying and think whether it's useful, whether you connect to it. And then there's podcasts that I've been doing with managers and artists to talk about, well, how have you managed it? And talking about their journeys. And so there's loads of resources up there. And that's kind of what I wanted to do, not just the book, but have a whole sort of resource library as well, which is starting to build nicely. So www.stayingsane.org.
That's awesome, man. And can people follow you on social media? Are you active on anything?
They can. I'm Staying Sane in the Music Game on Facebook, Staying Sane Book on Instagram. I'm really not social media at all, man. I'm, you know, I say to artists, it's great to promote. It's a great promotion tool. I'm personally pretty done with it, actually. Like, honestly, I'm finding it much better for my mental health. I'm hardly on it at all. I mean,
stay sane, then it might be best.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I mean, I say to artists, you know, you need it. You need it. So get in and get out, basically. Put stuff out there, share it around, and then get the hell out of there. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. Is sure, you know, come and visit on there, but actually just go to the website. It's all up there, and read the book, you know.
No, that's fair enough, man. Thank you so much for joining the podcast, Brett. It's been really good to talk to you. And I haven't fully read the whole book yet, but I look forward to digging into it properly.
Great. Thanks, Uwe. It's great to chat to you, man.
You're very welcome, man. It's my pleasure. So this has been Brett Leboff on Real Talk with Zuby. Details matter, and at OZ Lifestyle Brands, they're all about the details. Their selection of men's accessories balance style with substance and quality and craftsmanship, showcasing both classic and casual designs. They also make shopping the easiest it's ever been for you while leaving plenty of change in your pocket for your next adventure. I highly recommend them. They've got some really dope wallets, watches, t-shirts, whole bunch of cool stuff there. If you're a man who's looking to style up their game without blowing the bank, I highly recommend OZ Lifestyle Brands. OZ Lifestyle Brands delivers a unique experience to elevate style for men with ultra discerning tastes. OZ is for men who found their calling but don't need to shout about it. So go check out their full range of products at OZLifestyleBrands.com. That is OZLifestyleBrands.com. To get 20% off your entire first order, just use the code ZUBYMUSIC at checkout for 20% off. That's ZUBYMUSIC at checkout for 20% off at OZLifestyleBrands.com. Go check them out.
When you need to work quickly and confidently, you need Grammarly. It's a trusted AI writing partner that helps you get work done faster with better writing. And it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites. 96% of users agree. Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.